It's Wednesday, the 1st of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Xavier Munford, Anthony Tolliver, Johnny O'Brien, and Nick Young. Monster Show brought to you by Loot Crate. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to watch this show live on YouTube, which you can do with each of the shows that we do, and you want to interact, well, you can do it. You can watch this show live on YouTube, but if you want to interact while you're watching live on YouTube, all you need to do is tweet at me at redrock_bball. You can follow me there on Twitter. You can tweet at me at any stage, of course. But if you want to interact live, do it now, and we can have a chat, because today we are going to be covering the Chicago Bulls and doing their season in review show. The Bulls, if you aren't aware, are my team, so I've got some thoughts, and I'll try not to be too parochial. I'll try not to be too homerish when talking about the Bulls, but I've obviously got a lot of thoughts, as I have lots of thoughts on all teams, but extra thoughts on the Chicago Bulls, so we're going to get into that in just a minute.
Let's get to it.
Okay, Michael, we'll get started on it right now, but before we get started on that, I want to share a couple of things that I've not discovered, more backed up some thoughts or awesome. Some thoughts that I've had over the season. You would have heard me speak about in these season in review shows, in the daily shows throughout the season, that playing fantasy basketball is a lot psychology, and it's a lot knowing who you're playing against and knowing tendencies and thought processes of not just your opponents, but also of knowing the general thought processes of people out there. And I bring this up for two reasons. First of all, I put a Twitter poll up today asking Knicks fans, do you want Tony Roten to be your starting point guard next season? Not would you be happy, not would you be okay with it, not, you know, how do you feel about it? Like, do you want Tony Roten to be your starting point guard? Over 30% of respondents said yes, they want Tony Roten. So they could pick people, they want Tony Roten to be their starting point guard. Now, to me, that is just ludicrously insane. And the reason I bring this up in this part here is because there is irrational responses to players. There are irrational likes of players, loves of players, dislikes of players, and it plays a big factor into their dynasty rankings. Tony Roten was almost objectively, well, he wasn't objectively, but he was pretty close to objectively the worst player in the NBA last season. He was absolutely dreadful. If you watch him play, he can rack up stats when he's playing on a Philadelphia 76ers team with no one else around and just totally ignoring any tenets of the game of basketball, of team play, of anything like that. He racked up some decent numbers. Can't shoot from the field, can't shoot from the line, can't shoot from three, turns the ball over, is just really a poor basketball player. But 30% of people want him to be the starting point guard over a first round draft pick in Jerry and Grant, over anyone they get in free agency. They want Tony Roten to be the guy. And again, I bring this up because people have odd views of people, and Tony Roten's a guy that gets extra hyped because he goes out there and because he's got a street baller mentality. He plays like a street baller, and when something goes right for him, he does it in a spectacular way. When he does something horrible, it goes wrong in a spectacular way as well. But that means his value is always going to be inflated by some people. Maybe 30% of your league think Tony Roten's the guy for me. He's going to be a star. And yes, he will put up fantasy stats, but he is actually that bad at playing basketball that it's going to limit his ability to stay on the court. And with a guy like Grant there and Jose Calderon still around, if for some reason the Knicks decide to start him as the point guard, they're going to figure it out pretty quickly that it's just not going to work out with him, and it's going to cost him time. So my roundabout point here is, if you're in a dynasty league, 30% of your league probably thinks Tony Roten's a good player. Get some value back for him. Hey, Tony Roten's going to be the starting point guard in New York, you guys. He's got a chance. Phil Jackson likes the big guards. Why don't you give me a top 100 player? I'll take Dennis Schroeder off you. How about you give me Jeff Teague? Teague's on the way out in Atlanta. You're going to have Roten. He's on the way up. Coming back. He's a young guy. That's the sort of conversation you should be happening, because this is the value that people place on players. And you hear me talk about it all the time. There are players that people have an irrational dislike for and an irrational like for. Nick Batum's a guy who people drop off extraordinarily quickly. Tony Roten, irrational love to me. And that's a key part. The other thing is I tried to do a Twitter mock draft, not fantasy draft, real incoming NBA draft over the weekend, and it got derailed by people making trades. Some of the trades were ludicrous, in my opinion. I'm not going to really detail the trades, but everyone was just trade happy. And some of the people said, I want to make a trade for the thrill of the trade. And that is where I think a lot of people in fantasy leagues come unstuck as well. And I've talked about this before, is people trade for the sake of trading. Let's offer a trade. I want to be a trade. Let's be a GM and trade and trade and trade and trade and trade. And I reckon 75% of the time, the deal that you make works out worse for you. You as an owner who hopefully is savvy, you should take advantage of these people who just want to trade just so they can see their name come up on the main screen saying team whatever executed a trade. Take advantage of them. But don't be that person who then goes, I've got to make a trade just because I haven't made a trade all season. I have to make one. I haven't made one this week. Let's make one. Let's do a trade. What is it? Think about it. Because people are just extraordinarily quick to make deals. And some of the mock trades that were going down this mock draft were just, they were just amazing trades that were being you know, Blake Griffin was going, Nerlens Noel was traded, Julius Okafor was traded, Joel Embiid was traded, Derek Rose was traded, Zach LaVine was traded. There were guys being traded all over the place. And for things that I just went, this makes no sense to me. But people, and again, it highlights the different value that people have on players, and you take advantage of that in your fantasy league. But it's the fact that people trade for the sake of trading. I want to make a trade, therefore we need to make a trade. Not I'm making a trade to make my team better. Not I'm making a trade to help fill a void in my statistical makeup of my team. I want to make a trade because I want to push accept on a trade. I want to feel like I'm negotiating. I want to feel like I'm winning. And people are like, oh, who won the trade? Who wins the trade? People want to feel like they're winning a trade. And that is really something that you can take advantage of by being prudent and by being very methodical in analyzing your trades, in offering your trades, rather than just being haphazard and hoping it all works out and just being, look at this, I traded 50 trades during the season. Cool. 45 of them were bad. And that's generally the way that sort of stuff happens to go. Now, you can be a really aggressive trader and really good at it and take advantage of these people. And if you were taking advantage of them and doing 20 trades and making them all in your favor, absolutely no issue with that. But there are the people who are out there who want to trade. And you need to really be careful with that sort of mindset and take advantage of that as an opposing owner and use that to your advantage. They want to be quick on the accept button. They want to be quick on the propose button. And they'll throw something out there that's going to be bad. It might happen 1 out of 10 trades that get proposed, but it'll be bad. And you can accept it and you can win. That's what I wanted to throw out there. Just a couple of observations that I meant. Just more playing the fantasy basketball psychology game, which I think is a really big part of it and a very underrated part of it. And really being able to determine crowd-sourced thinking on certain players is a key part to being able to realize where you can get value and in your drafts and in trading and all that sort of stuff. That's it. Let's get on to the Chicago Bulls, who had a really poor season after firing Tom Thibodeau. They hired Fred Hoiberg, and he looked lost a lot of the time. The roster didn't help. It wasn't suited to what style he wants to play. And, you know, guy in his first year, you can crush them at times. And I wasn't a massive fan of Hoiberg, but you can't really be overly critical of a guy in his first season. When there was a lot of injuries, we know there was a stack of injuries in this team, and that's pretty much par for the course for the Bulls. But trying to implement a new system, you know, rocky personal relations stuff with Joakim Noah and the benching, all the injuries, the change in tempo, the pace, all that sort of stuff was obviously different in Chicago, and it led to a poor season. Now, they finished 42-40, which is, it's not great, but it's not completely horrible, and the East was a little bit improved in terms of overall records of playoff teams, and in past years that would have gotten them into the playoffs, but it didn't this season. So they're facing a very interesting offseason, the Bulls. They own pick 14 and pick 48 in this upcoming draft. Pick 14, a lottery pick, would have loved it to have been higher, but obviously it isn't, given the fact that they just missed out on the playoffs. There is going to be some talent there, and this draft doesn't lack superstars, but I think it's got a fair amount of depth, and there's a decent selection of guys the Bulls are going to have at that spot. I'm going to be covering that in the draft preview podcast they're going to have coming up on the weekend. I might as well reveal the person's name who's going to be. I'm going to have Sam Vecenie on from CBS Sports, a college basketball writer and expert over there. So me and him are going to be discussing the draft on Saturday morning Australian time, Friday night US time. So if you have any draft-specific inquiries, let me know, and we can discuss that with Sam on the podcast in a few days' time. But the Bulls have got some options there at pick 14. it is a bit of a crossroads season for them, I think, with the free agency of players this season and coming up next season as well. They're going to have to make decisions on. This year, we know the front court is has a possibility of making a big difference or a big change. We've got Joakim Noah, who's an unrestricted free agent. We've got Pau Gasol, who's got a $7.7 million player option, which he will be declining to make him unrestricted free agent. You've got Etuan Moore, who was one of the biggest surprise packets of the season. He's an unrestricted free agent after making just $1 million last season. And Aaron Brooks is an unrestricted free agent as well. He was the backup point guard for the majority of the season until Moore took over that role. Got Cam Bairstow and Cristiano Felizio with non-guaranteed deals. Almost a guarantee to me that they will guarantee Felizio's deal. Bairstow, not so sure, but I reckon they might want to keep him around because he can play Bairstow. He just has been buried, obviously, but he can be a serviceable fifth big on this team. He might not get much at the end of his rookie season. He might not get extended past that, but I think they look to bring him back next season. The year after that, they've got Taj Gibson, they've got Derrick Rose, both as unrestricted free agents as well as Nikola Mirotic's restricted free agency. So some big free agent decisions coming up in the next two seasons for the Chicago Bulls, and it's going to frame a lot of what they do in this offseason and whether they look to tear it down and start again or reload. They've got some big decisions to make, but the front court is probably the biggest one. You would be stunned if Pau Gasol is back on this team. I would be absolutely flabbergasted if he is back here. But the Bulls, you can never count anything out with this front office, who does make some pretty weird decisions at times. It appears that Joakim Noah won't be back, but he could obviously change his mind. But would the Bulls want him back? He's 31 years old. Yes, he's a big spiritual leader of this team, but they sort of phase that out this season anyway by benching him, by reducing his role, and then he wasn't with the team for the whole last 4 months of the season as he was recouping from shoulder surgery. So they're sort of phasing that part of his role out of it. So I don't imagine that he will be back, given the strength of the front court that they had, the depth of the front court with a couple of those young guys like Mirotić and Portis, who will be looking for some bigger roles. They're still going to need a center, obviously, but there is a bit of a changing of the guard happening in Chicago. Let's talk now about the players who did play this season, and we'll start with the best player on this team, and that is Jim Butler. And I was not as high on Butler as a lot of people were heading into the season. A lot of people were picking him around 10, 11, 14, that sort of range. I had him, I think, by my last rankings prior to the preseason or prior to the regular season, I think I had him at 26th or 27th. I ended up being a bit off on that, but as a 9-cat player, he ranked 15th. As 8-cat, he ranked 19th. So taking him at the start of the second didn't work out that well, and he was actually quite poor after the All-Star break. He suffered an injury again, and he has been an injury, not injury prone. He's been a player who suffered injuries, different injuries all the time, and that knee injury was just horribly managed by this team when he went, oh no, he'll miss a day. He didn't miss a day. That was a definite ligament issue in his knee. It ended up costing him 4 weeks or so, came back, didn't look right, missed more time again, and when he did come back fully and start playing, he didn't look the same. He's post All-Star splits in 8-cat, 16 versus 34. It's not great. 9-cat, 11 versus 29. So a big drop-off for him in that second half of the season. So not only did he miss games at that time of the year, but when he returned, his form wasn't great, and that was playoff time for fantasy basketball. And he let you down to a degree. Not placing any blame on Jim, but not his best year. In terms of his on-off numbers, he was second on the team in on-off numbers for the season as a plus 2.4, so that obviously shows his importance to the team. We'll get to the guy who led the team in plus-minus later on. If we look at what his stats were on the season, Butler played 67 games at 37 minutes a game, so he did see a marginal decrease in minutes, but really not that much given the way that Thibodeau ran him into the ground. And at some point, these minutes have got to be catching up with him. He can't play a full season. He's played one full season in his 5 years in the NBA and continually misses like 20 games a year, basically. But he averaged 21 points. He hit a three a game. He had 5.5 rebounds. He had 4.8 assists, which was a big increase. 1.6 steals, 0.6 blocks, and he shot 46 and 83 from the field. But he suffered a drop of 7% on his three-point shooting, down to 31%. He was a very, very poor three-point shooter. He dropped his rebounding numbers, dropped a little bit as well. His steal numbers dropped partially too. Overall, his season was a disappointment when you compared it to his breakout year, the one before. It was still, he still averaged 21, 5.5, and 5 with a 3 and 1.6 steal. So they're still really good numbers, really solid percentages, and a guy that at that end of the second round is probably the right spot for him. But he showed some regression. he showed some interesting personality tendencies with the "this is my team now" sort of rumours, and you hear rumours go around all the time, but when you hear just the constant torrent and flood of rumours about locker room disharmony, about talks about Jimmy Butler changing since he got the money, about becoming a more selfish person, about a me-first guy, about a guy that's looking to play everything in ISO and shooting when he shouldn't be shooting. When you're shooting 31% for three, you shouldn't be launching as many threes as he did. You know, not only three a game, but he was so bad at them. He shouldn't have been doing what he was doing. And a real odd sort of change in Jimmy Butler's personality. So much so that trade rumors started appearing. Jimmy Butler to the Celtics, Jimmy Butler to the Magic. All this sort of talk of Butler going to a different team. It's concerning as a Bulls fan. In terms of what he did, advanced statistics, still led the team in win shares comfortably at 9.1. Win shares per 48, he was the leader there. He led the team in box score plus minus. He was the best offensive player in offensive box score plus minus. He led the team in VORP. He was second on the team in PER. Really put up some nice numbers. And overall, a good true shooting of 56%. But still a few worrying signs. I do think that he can bounce back from them in his second season under Fred Hoiberg, but wasn't the massive improvement that some people saw coming. I didn't see how you could see a huge improvement coming given how much he improved the year before, but still didn't really live up to expectations as much as possible. Pau Gasol, I didn't expect Pau Gasol to have the sort of season that he did. He was absolutely tremendous in this season. He even took a marginal step forward, and I thought he was set for a bit of a drop-off. He finished the season as the 18th player in 9 cat leagues, 21st in 8 cat leagues. Saw a drop-off post-All-Star like a lot of the Bulls, and the Bulls were actually terrible post-All-Star break as well. He averaged 17 points a game in 32 minutes. He hit 0.3 threes. He had 11 rebounds, 4 assists. 4 assists for Pau Gasol is just massive. 2 blocks, 47 and 79, and hit 35% of those threes. So we saw him have a great year under Thibodeau for the first season, but almost equally as good this season, and that 4 assists is a career-high mark. Where Gasol goes next remains to be seen in terms of his dynasty value. You would have to think that he takes a step back. We don't know where he's going. The rumours about the Spurs abound. If he goes to the Spurs, then his role is going to decline. You will not be expecting Pau Gasol to be a top 20 player. In fact, I would be at this point stunned if he's a top 40 player next season. He's definitely got his downsides when he plays, most of that being defense related. But when you look at his defensive advanced numbers, they come out pretty good. Like he was second on the team, in defensive box score plus minus. He finished second on the team in win shares. He had I think he led the team in defensive win shares. He posted a team-high PER. He was able to put up some nice stats-wise defense, but at times he just looked disinterested on the court, and he doesn't want to be here with this team. I think that's what we can ascertain from that. His on-off, he was 1.8, so he wasn't the leader on this team in the box score, not box score plus-minus, in the on-off data, which if you aren't aware, the on-off data is it's when a player is, how many points per 100 possessions a player is better when they're on the court versus when they're off the court. I hope that makes sense. Next, let's transition to one of my boyfriends, Nikola Mirotic. Now, for you guys who are watching this live, I just need to. All right, so Nikola Mirotic, he led the team in on-off numbers. I thought he was horribly misused for big chunks of the season. He had a 2.9 on-off number for the season, which was tops on the team. He finished the season as the 88th ranked player in 9 cat leagues, 92nd in 8 cat leagues, but we saw he got absolutely smoking hot at the end of the year. He was 58th in 8 cat post-All-Star, 71st in 9 cat, and was an absolute must-own player for big chunks of the season. And I'm going to go out on a limb. I know that people think that I have irrational Mirotic love. I think he is a tremendous player. He's a tremendous fantasy asset, and I had him ranked super high. I think I had him 40th at the start of the season. He obviously didn't live up to that. But he was misused. He wasn't played, and his confidence was hurt a lot by the way that Fred Hoiberg used him, and I talked about it ad nauseum throughout the season. If he missed a shot, if he missed, 3 shots to start the game, well, he was benched, and we didn't see him till halftime. If he hit his first 3 shots, he'd play 30 minutes and put up a tremendous line and be a key figure He only ended up playing 25 minutes a game, which is just batshit insane in terms of what he should have been doing. He should have been starting next to Nikola Mirotic. He should have been starting next to Joakim Noah for the season, and that's how they should have run their lineup. Offense, defense, big men. Not him and Pau Gasol. The defense there was horrible. Not Gasol and Noah. It's not a good combo. Not Gibson and Gasol. It didn't make sense. Mirotic needed to start. He needed to play more than 25 minutes a game. Now, he only averaged 11.8 points per game. He averaged two triples, and two triples is obviously tremendous as a big man. 5.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 0.9 steals, 0.7 blocks, 41 and 81 is his percentages, but he hit 39% of his three-point attempts, which is obviously a huge amount. Now, he's only 24. He's played two seasons in the NBA, and you would have had to take him probably in the top 60 to draft him last season. You are not going to have to take him that high, but there is still a monster chance to me that he is a top 50 player next year. If he plays 30 minutes a night, it is going to be absolutely on in terms of the stats that he can put up. And if we look at what he did this season in his games where he played 30 minutes a game, he played 13 games at between 30 and 39 minutes. He averaged in those games, and it is only 13 games, so it's a pretty small sample size, but he averaged 22.5 points. He averaged 6.5 rebounds and 2.6 assists. He hit 53 three-pointers in 13 games. And if you're not that quick on maths, that's four threes a game in 13 games. It is just a ridiculous amount. He blocked a shot a game. He had over a steal a game. He shot 49% from the field. He shot 47% from three. He shot 86% from the line. He had a true shooting of 67%. He had a usage of 24. He had an offensive rating of 126 and a defensive of 109. His numbers were through the roof because he was given confidence. And again, he got hot playing, but it's confidence related to him. And it's fair enough. You've got to make your first three shots, Nikola, or you're sitting your ass down for a quarter. How does that make anyone play well? That's the almost definition of results-based versus process-based. Are you taking the right shots? Are you getting into the right position? Are you doing what needs to be doing? Is the offense structuring correctly around you? Not like, you missed two shots. Can you come and sit down for a bit while we put Taj Gibson on, who, for as tireless a worker as he is, he's not as talented, and he's not as good, and he shouldn't be playing as many minutes. Same goes with Bobby Portis, who is honestly dreadful for most of the season. Mirotic, at those low minutes, and 25 minutes a game is not many, still a clear player inside the top 100. And had poor stretches, no doubt. But he was 61st in 9-cat per 36 value. He has got, if he plays 32 minutes a game, he will be a top 40 player. Absolutely no doubt in my mind. If he played 35, then it's all over. Because he can do everything. The field goal percentage is a concern, yes, but so is so many of the other players in that area. I can't stress enough how much you should be buying low on Nikola Mirotic, if that's possible, because he was red hot to end the year. But if people look at his overall performance and go, 11 points, 25 minutes, Josh, can you get your hand off it for a sec? If people think that, then steal him. Absolutely, it is a theft. If Gasol's not going to be there, if Noah's not going to be there, that's two people that Hoiberg can't give the minutes to. Mirotic might not be a guy who can handle 32 minutes, fine. But if he gets 29, then he's going to put up big numbers, like huge numbers. And if you pick him anywhere in that 8th, 9th round, I almost guarantee that you're going to be laughing next season. I cannot wait to see what he's able to do. In terms of what he did this year, it was almost on par with what he did in his rookie season. He hit, per 36 minutes, he hit three triples a game. His rebounding was similar, his assists, his steals, his blocks, his points, his shooting percentages, almost identical, except he took his threes from 32 to 39. I'm super excited to see what Mirotic can do if he's given a bigger role, and it's going to be very, very intriguing to me to see how Hoiberg uses him next season. But I cannot be more excited about Nikola Mirotic at this point. I think that there is just so much to like about him from a fantasy point of view. Yes, he makes some dumb decisions, but we saw what he can do when things start to click at the end of the year. He makes some bad pump fakes and bad offensive decisions, but the guy is super talented, and it is going to work out for him, I'm confident. And we're going to see a massive third year from Nikola Mirotic. And this is not just me doubling down on having him as a high-ranked player last season. I'm honestly believing that he will be an absolute star for this team now that they're sort of remodeling that front court. Taj Gibson. Not a massive Taj Gibson fan from a fantasy point of view. His upside is extraordinarily limited. He was the 99th ranked player in 9-cat. He was 121st in 8-cat. In fact, his on-off numbers, he was a net negative at negative 0.9 points per 100 possessions. Worse off the team was with him starting on the court. And yes, he does some things. He is a good defender. No doubting that at all. He's a guy that can get rebounds. Can he shoot? Not really. Can he stretch the floor? Absolutely not. Can he pass? No, not really. Is he big? No. He's just a guy who's a tremendously hard worker. Now, he did finish third on this team in win shares because he is a key contributor to this team, and I love him as a first big off the bench, as a sixth man type guy. He finished fourth on the team in box score plus minus. He put up really good numbers. He had a PER of 15.7. He had a true shooting of 56%. But you need him to do more than that. You need him to be a better player at doing those things when his other areas are so limited. He played 27 minutes a game. He averaged just 8.6 points. So he's not an offensive threat, obviously. 6.9 boards, yeah, it's all right. 0.6 steals, not good. 1.1 blocks, yeah, 53 and 69. So his upside is really, really limited. And coming into free agency next year, he's older than you might think. You might think he's old, but he's 30 years old. So he's got nowhere really to go in terms of going up. He could start on certain teams, but his ability to play 30 minutes a night and be effective in 30 minutes a night, to me, is pretty much evaporated now. He's the guy who should be playing 25 minutes a night as a backup center in small ball situations and play at the four. He can do that, but he's not the future of this team, nowhere near it. So to me, Taj Gibson, he tops out at a guy that ranks at about 90, but even then, I don't think he probably cracks the top 100 next season. So again, Gibson has a lot of love. He's not quite Tony Roten level of love, but people do have definitely have feelings towards him and really like what he can do. I'd be trying to sell out of him if I can get enough value out of him. If someone believes that he's going to jump in and play 33 minutes with Gasol gone, I'd be taking that bet and selling him off for a top 70, top 60 type player. I doubt anyone believes in that, but there could be. There's always someone out there, and it's worth testing the waters to see if you can get that sort of reaction from someone. Derrick Rose, out of the players who got regular minutes, and I'm not including Bobby Portis in this, Derrick Rose was the worst player on this team in terms of his on-off numbers. He's a negative 4.8, so the team was 4.8 points per 100 possessions better off if his ass was on the bench. He finished 206th in 9-cat leagues, but what Derrick Rose did at the end of the season is show us a glimpse and show us that maybe just there's something happening there. 206th in 9-cat leagues, that's bad. But 8-cat, 130th. It's a big difference between what the turnover category does to his ranking. And he was ranked 101st post-All-Star break. Now, if you looked at his numbers and went, he's ranked 206th, you think he couldn't be owned in 9-cat leagues. But you know my thoughts on turnovers in head-to-head formats. I wouldn't be worried about them. So he should have been owned most of the season. But a really strong second half of the year from Derrick Rose makes you have some sort of hope as a Bulls fan that maybe is Derrick Rose returning to something. But he played 32 minutes a night and 66 games, so that's already a win. He averaged 16.5 points. That's pretty good. 0.7 threes. This is where it's oscillating now. 0.7 threes, that's not enough. 3.4 rebounds, yeah, whatever. 4.7 assists as a point guard, not a big enough number. 0.7 steals, 0.2 blocks, 43 and 79, and hit 29% of his threes. He needs to get that field goal percentage to 45. He needs to get his threes to 35. And you just don't feel like it's going to happen with him. He needs to be more aggressive penetrating and being able to kick out and that sort of stuff. But he has failed to hit 30% of his threes over the last two seasons. And that is really a horrible situation for a guy who needs to have some sort of semblance of an outside shot. We look back to his MVP season. He averaged 25, 4, and 7.7. He had 1.6 triples a game. He shot 45 from the field, 86 from the line, and 33 from three. So even if he takes himself from 28 to 33 from three-point land, it's a big jump, and it would make a big deal to me. Now, you don't have to believe heavily in Derrick Rose, but I think that Derrick, and there's heaps of talk of Derrick Rose, oh, they should trade him. I don't think they're moving Derrick Rose this season. For start-off, who replaces him? I don't think they're moving Derrick Rose. Whether they re-sign him in free agency remains to be seen. But I think that there's enough there for him to take a little bit of a jump forward. But his value is extraordinarily low. His current value in the NBA landscape is as low as it's been to me, given the way he played. In the fantasy landscape, it's pretty low. There'll be some people out there who are Derrick Rose fans. I've got a Derrick Rose jersey behind me. I'm a Derrick Rose fan. I'm not doing this by any biased measure, though. I think he has a bit of a bounce back next year. And bounce back means he doesn't get into the top 20, but he gets inside the top 100. And I think he's a solid player that when you're looking for a point guard or looking for a scorer in your 10th pick or your 9th pick, I think he's a fair guy to look at because he does have upside to have an improved season and maybe by the stroke of luck hit a top 60 sort of number. Maybe. It's probably pushing it, but there's a chance of that. And if not, you get 17 points, you get 5 assists, you get a steal, you get a 3, and you're happy with that at with your 9th or 10th pick. You could do worse, but his value is pretty low, and I'd be seeking him out. If I can get him for someone, an untested rookie maybe, who you don't think has got a ton of potential, Rose can produce for the next 2 to 3 years and be decent without being spectacular. But that negative 4.8 is a real poor number for him in terms of the on-off numbers to be the worst on this team. Joakim Noah was really poor this season in terms of his fantasy production. He finished the season 199th in 8-cat, 173rd in 199 in 9-cat leagues, 173rd in 8-cat leagues. He averaged just 4.3 points in his 22 minutes. 8.8 rebounds though, 3.8 assists, a block, 38 and 49 is his percentage. So just absolutely horrific shooting percentages from Noah. But in terms of advanced numbers, he was still pretty impressive. Third on this team in box score plus minus, led the team in defensive box score plus minus, finished sixth on the team in win shares per 48, and only played 29 games. He had a PER of 14.1, which belies the horrible statistics that he put out, and was a positive VOR player. So there was a lot to like about him defensively, especially. His offense is almost, you could almost classify it as atrocious. And yeah, an offensive box score plus minus of negative 2.3 versus a defense of 4.3 sort of tells the tale there. Does he have fantasy value? Well, if he played 30 minutes a night, you get 10 rebounds, you get 2 blocks, you get 4.5 assists, that's pretty good. You got to eschew points. You have to really be concerned about your percentages. And he's not someone that I'm overly interested in thinking is going to be able to bounce back to being that top 40 sort of player he was a couple of seasons ago. I don't really imagine that's going to be something that's on the books for Noah coming up. But he still showed that he can do enough, and I think pairing him with Mirotić, if he returns, is really good in terms of his defensive ability. It's not going to be great for his fantasy stats, but as a rebounding stream, as an out-of-position assists guy, as a shot blocker, you're going to get numbers out of him. And I'm almost confident he plays more than the 22. Well, I am confident. I'm confident he plays more than the 22 minutes a game that he got this season. I think he goes back up and maybe only gets 27 minutes a game, but that's still a big jump, and it should see a big jump in his statistics. But when you're coming as far back as ranked 200th, does that even put you inside the top 150? And I say probably not at this point until we figure out where he lands. Etuan Moore, a bit of a surprise, well, a big surprise packet last season. He finished the season ranked 220th, but 144th after the All-Star break. He took on big roles when Rose was hurt, when Jimmy Butler was hurt, when basically that whole backcourt and wing situation was hurt. He was playing big roles and ended up being the default backup point guard. So whenever Rose would sit, he would start, and it wouldn't be Aaron Brooks. He had a good on-off number of 1.7. He ended up playing 21 minutes a game at 7.5 points, 0.8 threes, 1.7 assists, 0.6 steals, hit 48% of his shots, 63% from the line, and a ridiculous 45% from three. I'm not sure whether that's realistic for Etuan Moore. When the Bulls signed him, and I thought, okay, well, this guy just showed nothing. When he was in Orlando, like, what did he do? He didn't do a huge amount there at all, really. And even his first season in Chicago, what did he provide? And this is such a big jump in his three-point percentages. Previously, he'd been an average guy, 38, 34, 35, 34, and now 45. It's just ridiculously above anything he's ever done. It's going to get him a really decent contract, and the Bulls should really look to bring him back as their backup point guard. But in terms of fantasy, do I think he takes a step forward from what he did this season? I think he can challenge for 16-team leagues. But he's not old, but he's not young either. He's been around a while. He's 27 years old. So he has been around in the system for a little bit of time. And you don't expect him to make too many major improvements for there. But for what he did, the three-pointers were key, obviously. And his defense was pretty impressive as well. In terms of his advanced numbers, they weren't overly kind on him. He was a negative 1.8 in box score plus minus, which is not fantastic. He did finish sixth on the team in win shares, but his win shares per 48 weren't ideal. He only ended up playing 59 games and put up a PER of 11.4, so not really superb numbers there. But still, probably easily his best season in the NBA. I just imagine him to sort of stagnate around that 170 to 190 ranking and keep that up again next season, playing probably in excess of 20 minutes, assuming he's back in Chicago, which I think at this point is a pretty safe expectation. Mike Dunleavy missed huge chunks of the season, only ended up playing 31 games. His fantasy numbers were poor. He did look better after the All-Star break, understandably, as he got his legs back. He finished 255th on the year in 9-cat and 254th in 8-cat leagues. We had a 100-position jump post versus pre-All-Star break. He played 23 minutes a game, which in hindsight is probably a little bit high for a guy that's definitely on the downside of his career. 7.2 points, 1.3 threes, half a steal, 41 and 78. And what does he really offer as a fantasy guy? Yes, he shot 39% from three, which the Bulls do really need, but they should be looking to really move Doug McDermott into more of those minutes. Yes, McDermott has a lot of his own issues, but he's heading into his third season, so he should be absorbing some of Dunleavy's minutes. So I would say 4 or 5 of Dunleavy's minutes should transition across to Dougie McDermott for next season and push him into a bigger role as the permanent starting small forward on this team. So Dunleavy's arrow is definitely pointing downwards, and I don't imagine that he touches anywhere near 20-team league value for the coming seasons. Dougie McDermott. He showed flashes, and he can be a guy that does get overrated because what he does is score, and he can score in big bunches. What he also doesn't do is everything. He doesn't do anything else. That's not true. He scores. He scores three-pointers. He scores free throws. He doesn't rebound. He doesn't assist. He doesn't steal. He doesn't block. He doesn't do any of those things. He averaged 9.4 points, 1.4 threes in his 23 minutes, but 2.4 rebounds, 0.7 assists, 0.2 steals, and 0.1 blocks, it's terrible. 45 and 86 is great. 43 from 3 is also really, really good. And he was red hot and showed so much improvement versus what happened with him under Thibodeau versus what we saw with him under Hoiberg. Well, it helps that he went from 9 minutes a game to 23 minutes a game, but even his per 36 numbers improved. His shooting improved, a 5% increase from the field. He took 11% increase from three as well. He took his free throws up to where they really should have been, and they were an abysmal 67% in his rookie season. But you worry about the defensive numbers, the ability to assist, the ability to grab rebounds. It's just not there for Dougie McDermott, and that's really going to be a concern for him in terms of fantasy rankings. He can be a top 100 player, but he can never be a top 50 player, I don't think. He could be a guy that averages 18 points and hits two threes and gives you 46 and 86. And nothing else. Nothing. Big negatives. And that keeps you out of the first half of drafts. So McDermott, I don't have massive hopes for him in terms of being able to develop all these things, because that's what he was like in college. He just did nothing in those other areas. And that's just what he's shown in his first two seasons. Now, I think a big breakout is coming. I think more minutes do come from him next season. But the breakout's going to come in terms of just increasing efficiency, scoring more. Yeah, maybe he can get a few more rebounds, but I don't imagine the playmaking. I don't imagine the defensive stuff is really going to improve all that much for McDermott. He finished fifth on the team in win shares. His box score plus minus, the defense was terrible. He was worst on the team in defensive box score plus minus at a negative 2.8, and that pushed him down to a negative 3.1 overall because the offense was pretty solid. But overall, not a good defensive showing from McDermott, and maybe that keeps him from getting that 28 minutes a night, just the fact that he's just so poor on that end, and don't really know if he's got the tools to actually improve there, and that is a concern. I don't love him for fantasy. I don't think that he ever becomes even probably a top 75 guy for any sort of season in his career, but he should be that guy who hovers between 100 and 120 scoring, giving you good percentages and hitting threes, which can be pretty useful in a rotisserie sort of format where those things can be hard to find in drafts. In terms of his on-off numbers, he was a negative 3.5, so one of the worst on the team in that sort of metric. Bob Portis. Really liked Bob Portis when I saw him at Summer League. Just played with a superhuman aggression and passion, running up and down the court like a crazy person. The eyes don't do any harm to that sort of reputation as well. He came in with just ludicrous expectations this season, given he was buried behind Gasol, behind Gibson, behind Mirotic, behind Noah as the fifth big. People were drafting him in standard leagues. Oh, he's just got to get an opportunity. Like, cool. But you got to wait for a few guys to fall over. And they did. They fell over. And Porter's, you know, Højbjerg come, oh, you've got to give Bobby a chance. We're going to play him. And there was the free Porter's movement or whatever it was, free Porter's hashtag on Twitter. And everyone's like, oh, let's get Porter's in. Let's pick him up. You know what happened when he played? He was really bad. He was a team worst, negative 8.6 on off numbers. He finished the season as the 279th ranked player in fantasy in 9-cat, 276th in 8-cat leagues, and just looked lost a lot of the times. He will obviously get better, and I think he projects to be a very, very good player, but he was terrible. Now, with Noah potentially gone, with Gasol likely gone, he's going to jump up the pecking order. He's going to jump up the rankings on this team. He played 18 minutes a game as a rookie, which is more than I thought he'd get. 7 and 5.5. He hit 0.3 threes, half a steal, half a block, 0.8 assists, 43 and 73, and hit 31% of his threes. We can expect him to be a 46 and 75 guy. He hits 35% of his threes and averages 12 and 7 with 0.7 steals and 0.7 blocks next year. It's not crazy to think that. And he might be, he's a guy that I think in that second half of your draft, in your 10, 11, 12, 13 pick, it's fine to grab him there just in case, but we'd have to see what the Bulls do in free agency, obviously. But as I mentioned on the Wizards podcast yesterday, how I have all the player comps, I thought Bobby Portis was a nice guy to look at here to see who his player comps were in terms of, obviously, comparisons, because that's what the player comps do. And the first name that comes up in my player comps was Antoine Jameson. I think he'd be pretty happy if he turns into Antoine Jameson. The second one, Anthony Bennett. Probably not so keen on that. But then we have Nikola Vucevic, Andre Blatch, Wilson Chandler. So four out of his five guys that you'd be very happy if he turns into any of those sort of players. So I think that he despite the struggles and the numbers don't look good for him, in two years' time, I think he can really challenge to be a top 50 player. And I've got high hopes for Bob Portis despite his struggles as a rookie, which you should come to expect from rookies. That's just what they do. He will be a much better player for this. And him and Mirotić in that front court can be... I think I can see Portis playing some center, to be honest, next to Mirotić. And them being a relatively potent pairing. His defense is what sort of kept him up in terms of his advanced numbers. Offense did really let him down. But that will come. That will improve. And he will be a good player. I'm almost confident of that. I'll say that again. I am confident that Bobby Portis will become a good player. I am confident that he will be a huge fantasy contributor. It may happen this year, and I think he does become Standard League relevant this year, back-end Standard League relevant, but the season after and the season after that is when we really should be pushing for him to be a top 50 sort of player. So Dynasty, it is the time to acquire him now if his owner just did not like what they saw and looked at the numbers he averaged and said, oh, look, he got an opportunity, and every time he started, he was shit, which is pretty much accurate. But there's so much upside for Bob Portis, and I can't wait to see him realize that. And if you listened to me during the season, you probably thought I hated Bobby Portis. What I hate, and this is, I never really hate any players. I hate expectations and thought processes on them. Portis is going to be the man. He's going to go on average 17 and 8 and get 1.5 blocks. Cool. He's not, unless he's playing against the under 12s. He wasn't going to do that. And I start hating expectation or unrealistic hopes for players, and that's what it was with Portis. Just the groundswell of hype for him was just out of control, and it was never going, and people were dropping valuable players, gotta get Portis. No, you don't, because there was a stage where I said, you know what, grab him and let's see what happens, but give him three games and then flick his ass off, and that's what you needed to do. Other people just really were super keen on sacrificing a lot to hold him, and it was never a great situation for him to pan out. But I do really like what he can bring moving forward. Aaron Brooks, nice on-off numbers, 1.5, but fantasy stats, he struggled. He got demoted behind Etuan Moore. He was 326th in 9-cat, 299th in 8-cat, and he'd been a guy that when Derrick Rose was injured could come in and be a guy that, yeah, I'm using this guy in DFS. I'm smashing Aaron Brooks. I'm adding him, and I'm running with him for 2 weeks, but that just didn't happen at all this year. He averaged only 7 points, 2.6 assists, a 3, shot 40 and 77, 36% from 3, and as I said, got replaced towards the end of the season, and as an unrestricted free agent over the age of 30, Where does he sit? He actually finished behind Mike Dunleavy in win shares, and Dunleavy played less than half of the games at what he played, and that's an indictment on what he was able to do. He was one of the worst players on this team in terms of win shares per 48, and actually I didn't mention this before, Derrick Rose was actually the second worst player on this team in terms of win shares per 48. behind Cameron Bairstow, or ahead of Cameron Bairstow only. So Rose was absolutely atrocious in his advanced numbers. Brooks, at this age, he fits as a third point guard, not a second point guard now. So any value that he had is going to evaporate quickly, and he might be in the league for one or two more seasons. Justin Holiday, a guy that came across in that trade for Kirk Heinrich with the Atlanta Hawks at the trade deadline. A pretty weird trade, but I think that the Bulls did it right by getting Holiday here. His numbers don't look fantastic. A negative 1.8 on-off, which is not horrible. 325th in fantasy, 9-cat, 331st in 8-cat leagues. Yeah, nothing too great. 4.5 points, 1.7 rebounds, 0.6 steals, which is really good in 15 minutes. 0.7 threes is also really good. And a 39% shooting and 34 from three. He's got upside. He's got room to grow, Justin Holiday. And from a guy who was pretty much an unknown, he's found himself a role. But he's 27 years old. Look, how much better is he going to get? He might have one more season where he makes a slight improvement, but I don't imagine Justin Holiday being a late bloomer and becoming a starter and playing 30 minutes a game and being a top 100 player. I just don't think it's ever going to happen. He is with the Bulls for one more season at least, and I think that he does find himself obviously still in the rotation and playing, but really only contributing outside of 30-team leagues if someone gets hurt. I've got a boyfriend on this team, and that's Nikola Mirotic. Whatever the opposite of a boyfriend is, that's what Tony Snell is. Now, Tony Snell, on-off numbers, best on the team. 8.3 points per 100 possessions. The Bulls were better than when he was on the bench. I have absolutely no idea why that is. And yes, he didn't play a huge amount of minutes, and there's a lot of noise in that stat because he played so few minutes, but he still played enough. He played 20 minutes in 64 games, so it's not a small percentage. It's not a small amount of minutes. It's just, it's a weird phenomenon to me. He was worst on this team in box score plus minus, and really his defense kept him close because he was a negative 3.4 on offense. He was one of the worst players on this team in win shares per 48 and total win shares as well. He posted a PER of 6.4, which is worst on this team behind Cameron Bairstow. He is just brutal. The Bulls have given him multiple opportunities to try and start and to try and grow, and it's never really happened for Tone Snell. I just don't believe in him. And he's another guy that, yeah, Jimmy Butler gets injured, let's grab Snell. Everyone, rush and grab Snell. He's going to start. No, Snell's starting. Grab him. He's going to play 30 minutes. Yeah, you know what he's going to do? He's going to score 15 points in... Sorry, he's going to score 20 points in one game, and everyone's going to have their hands down their pants quicker than you can say anything. And then he's going to combine for 6 points in his next five games, and he's going to look terrible while doing it. And yes, he's a good defender, but does it translate into anything in terms of fantasy stat-wise? Not really. He averaged 0.3 steals as a good defender in 20 minutes. You think, oh, you only played 20 minutes, Josh? Cool. Move him up to 30 minutes, and what does he average? 0.5? Less than 0.5 steals? It's just shit numbers. He shot 37% from the field. He averaged 0.9 threes on 36%. Well, that's a positive. I'm happy with that. 5 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist. He's a nothing player to me, and he's a nothing fantasy contributor. And once his contract's up, don't really think the Bulls have any need to re-sign him. The defense is really good, but it doesn't translate into fantasy stats. It doesn't make up for the fact that he is just horrific on offense. He is one of my least favorite players in the NBA, and not a fan. I am a fan of Cristiano Felizio. He finished second on this team in on-off at 7.9. He ranked 322nd in fantasy, but it was a massive finish to the end of the year when Pau Gasol was out and Joakim Noah was out, where he finished 272nd post-All-Star break. He ended up playing only 31 games, and the numbers don't look that great. 3.4 points, 3.3 rebounds, 0.4 blocks, 57 and 71 is his percentages. But when he was given the chance down the stretch, he would start and he would finish games over Gasol. He didn't start over Gasol, but he would finish games over Gasol, and he looked like the Bulls had found something. They had unearthed a player. Now, it was his rookie season. He came across from Brazil, and honestly, when the Bulls brought him in to their summer league team and signed him, no one really knew much about this guy. They went, oh, here comes Felizio. Let's all go watch Felizio. And he looked okay there, but he didn't do anything massively impressive to show out huge amounts. And when the team already had five big men better than him, he thought, okay, cool. But his last three games of the year, he played 23, 27, and 29 minutes. He went 16-5 with two blocks in the first one of those, 16-6 in the next one, and he went 6-9-4 with two blocks in the third game. It's a pretty strong way to end the season, and definitely, to me, gets that contract guaranteed for next season. And with Gasol and Noah moving, again, like these other guys, he moves up. And is it crazy to think, yes, it probably is, but if the Bulls don't bring a center in, I wouldn't hate them playing him as a starter and playing 27 minutes as a starter next to Mirotić and then throwing some Portis in there as a small ball guy and using those three. Yes, it's a very young front court, but I think they've got to see how those three mesh, because I really liked what Felicia was able to do this season. I think that he can be a fantasy contributor. He's a really good free throw shooter, he's a decent free throw shooter for a big man, a good field goal percentage guy, good shot blocker, good rebounder, decent scorer. I think he's got a lot to offer. Does he ever become a top 100 player? That might be doubtful, but it's not completely out of the realms of possibility. He is, to me, a super, super deep sleeper for next season. Again, depending on what the Bulls do in that spot. But if you want to trade a player who's ranked 300th, I would get him, because there's a chance he's a top 200 guy next year. He finished second on this team in win shares per 48. He had a positive box score plus minus. He was 1.4 in defense, which was fourth on the team. He posted a 17.6 PER. He had a true shooting of over 60. He was impressive and ended the season on a super high note, and the Bulls do really like him. It took a while for them to come out and really sort of show that, but they like him and they like what he showed, and interested to see. It's all part of the melange of this team and how they run things next season. He is going to be an intriguing guy to look at. Cam Bairstow. I don't think we need to touch much on Bairstow. He had a couple of decent performances, but really he starts and he plays placeholder starter minutes. He played 6 minutes a game and averaged 1.9 points, shot 33% from the field. I think he's going to be a good NBL or European player, and that's pretty much it. Don't think there's much upside for him in dynasty formats or anything like that. All right, I am going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to be back to answer your questions regarding the Chicago Bulls. As we've been doing this entire podcast, of course, but I'm going to answer the questions that you guys sent through, which you can do via Facebook or via Twitter, whichever one of those social media platforms you prefer. The first one comes from Midnight Walker, who's on Twitter at KingMidnight60. He says, should they start Gibson since Powell is very unlikely to return? You heard my take on Gibson before. I actually don't hate if they start him with Mirotić, but I would really love to see them giving Portis more minutes, and I think they will, and it depends if they bring anyone else back, but Gibson should start, but he should only really play as a center. I don't think he should be playing as a four and playing as a defensive, shot-blocking, rim-protecting type center. But even then, he's not really an awesome rim protector. He gets some shot blocks, but he's not the best guy there. I don't hate it, but to me, his best role is a bench role. Benjamin Shavar, who's on Twitter at Benjamin Shavar, he says, why don't they trade Derrick Rose? I'll tell you why they don't trade Derrick Rose, Benjamin. Because it is the worst time to trade Derrick Rose. What is the point? He's got one more year left on his contract, and you know, he might go for nothing next year. But what are you realistically getting back for Derrick Rose at this point? Unless someone blows you away and goes, we'll give you a lottery, an unprotected first rounder. We'll give you young assets. We'll give you whatever. We'll give you a 3-and-D wing, whatever. Like, what's someone giving you for Derrick Rose at this point? Hey guys, Derrick Rose has had the worst season of his career. Do you want him? That doesn't work. People always want to trade players because, oh, this guy sucks. He's terrible. Hey, do you want him? He's good. He's all right. Have him. But it doesn't work that way to me. I don't think it does. Look, the Bulls might trade him. But what are they getting back from him, really? Who is giving anything of value to Derrick Rose at this point? what could they possibly be giving that makes you go, I need to get away from this guy who could actually turn things around this year? And if he turns him around, don't you want him to turn him around for you rather than trade him when he's at the lowest point of what he can, what he's done in his career, and people think that he's washed up completely and he's a hack? That not bagging you, Benjamin, but that's why they don't trade him. What's the point at this point? What do you get back? What do you benefit? You got one more year left at 20 million. Cool. The cap's jumping out of the ass. It's flying up, and it's flying up again next year. You're not going to be in trouble for cap space. Powell's gone. Joakim's gone. You're going to have room. Do you need to clear that 20 million out? Unless you're getting something great back, then fine. But you don't just do it. Again, you don't just do it for the sake of doing it. Sam Philp says, does Chicago have a dysfunctional front office? I think that Gar Forman and John Paxson get along all right. It's the interaction with everyone else that's the problem. It's the interaction with coaching staff. It's the interaction with players that's a problem. I think the front office is not infighting with each other. I think they're slapping each other on the back. Oh, good job, Gar. Good job, John. Well done, Pax. Good job. I think they're doing that. But the way they interact with others is the concern. The way they interact with coaching staff, training staff, which is absolutely abysmal, by the way, with players, with decisions that they make. Some of the decisions they make are poor. If they decide they're bringing Pau Gasol back, well, they're completely inept. They've got to bring Joakim Noah back. Oh, sorry, that's not true. I misspoke. If they do bring Joakim Noah back, it needs to be at the right price. It shouldn't be at $15 million. He shouldn't be commanding that sort of money at age 31 for this team. They refuse to make trades. So they're dysfunctional in that they don't function optimally, but they're not dysfunctional in that you look at them and go, why are they fighting with each other? Why are they making mistakes in spite of each other or because of each other? I don't think they're in that sort of sense. Bush_League_ball says, I was wondering about Portis's value going forward. I foresee big minutes coming next season for him and if he will capitalize. I talked about that already, Mr. Ball. And yes, I think that he can find himself inside the top 100 next season just, but he's got top 50 upside in the next 2 to 3 years. The Halo Array asks another question. This all ties back to my spiel at the start about people trading. He says, any possible landing spots for D-Rose in a trade? No. I can't see where he goes and what value you get. He might go to Brooklyn. What the hell are they giving you back? There's no... Who is trading for Derrick Rose? Mallow? Come on. Joseph Diffenbach on Facebook says, will this review go for over 2 hours? No, I think I've kept it under just over an hour here, Joseph. So no, we're good. He says, seriously though, what is the front court rotation going to look like for next season? There's many potential moving parts. I agree. I've talked about the front court a lot. They might bring Noah back, but to me, it should be all Mirotic. It should be part Porus. There should be Felicio in there, and they should look to bring in someone else. Whether it's, I wouldn't hate them bringing, and I say this a lot, I like Dwayne Dedman as a part-time rim protector. Bismack Biyombo is going to get so overpaid, it's not funny, so I'm not sure I love that contract. If he gets 20-plus million, that GM is making a mistake. But Mirotic, they've got the parts and pieces there. Mirotic and Portis, they do need a definitely a big man. And if they bring Noah back at a decent contract, that's a fine guy. And the Noah-Mirotic combination, I think it could be a really superb front court pairing. Defense, offense, passing from Noah. I think it would work really well. So it all depends on, it depends entirely on, they might bring in a guy as a rim protector, Deontay Davis with pick 14. I think that they should go for a wing or a point guard. Wade Baldwin or Timothy Luwawu would be awesome picks for me at that spot. But they might take Deontay Davis. They might get, probably not Domantas Sabonis, he'd be gone. Probably not Henry Ellison, but they might go one of those bigs there. And he comes in as that rim protecting sort of player. So there is a lot to really digest with this team, and we're not going to really know anything until free agency, but there's opportunity to try and capitalize it for dynasty formats now by getting a guy like Portis, by getting super low on Derrick Rose, by getting low on Mirotic, by maybe selling out of Pau Gasol, by not having anything to do with Tony Snell, all those sort of things that you can do. We're done. Chicago Bulls done and dusted. I hope you enjoyed the show, guys. If you did, give it a thumbs up on YouTube or leave a review on iTunes. It helps the show tremendously in getting up the rankings and attracting new sponsors. If you do leave a review, you can be a sponsor of today's podcast. Forgot to mention that at the start of the show. That will be back for tomorrow's show, so I do apologize for that. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. And If you like the show, give it a retweet when I tweet it out as well. That would be super. And on Facebook, you can share the posts that I do there and just help get the show out to people. And it helps everything. It helps this show's quality improve. It helps this show's reach improve. It helps everything improve. And any sort of sharing on social media that you can do of the podcast is always greatly appreciated. We are done today, guys. The next podcast will be the Houston Rockets. Again, I hope you do too. I look forward to the draft preview podcast with Sam Vecenie of CBS Sports coming on the weekend. Can't wait to talk draft with Sam. The draft is one of my favorite times of the year. So look forward for that one coming out in the next couple of days. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.